A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in
concentrate
time
on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 354. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Lavender Castle. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So once again, this is our roughly once a year look at a Gerry Anderson production. In this case, Lavender Castle was a series that combined stop-motion animation with computer-generated animation for spaceships and backgrounds, and it ran in 1999 and 2000 with a total of 26 episodes, each episode only about 10 minutes long.
Yes, they're quite quick, and they get through their business quite fast, don't they?
Yes, they do. Quick little adventures.
And this was a show that combined stop motion animation, so they actually had physical puppets, but with CGI animated spaceships and backgrounds for the characters to interact with. And this gives us a really sort of rich fantasy space opera from Gerry Anderson, which is something slightly unusual for him. It's certainly weird and wonderful with lots of wacky characters.
Yes, absolutely. It has a much more fantastical kind of feel to it than most of his productions do. Although it has these science fiction elements with the spaceships and so on, but there is some of that feel as well.
So last time we talked about the good ship Paradox, captained by Captain Thrice with his strange crew on their mission to find the fabled Lavender Castle of the title, and as we've said, along the way going to interact with all sorts of wonderful alien creatures, strange planets, strange missions, people in peril, all sorts of an assortment of craft in getting their way. They really do run into all sorts of strange adventures.
Yes, absolutely. And they are quite often deceived by the evil Dr. Aegon, who can disguise himself as other creatures and lure them in by appearing to be in distress, and so on. But the crew always managed to escape and to resolve the little adventure within about 10 minutes.
As we say, they get through it.
Yes, and Isambard, the engineer, has his engine that seems to be like a separate thing that's connected into the ship, and he will spur it into action with blows from a hammer, and you know, Roger will pilot them out, and they're out for the end of the episode.
Or there'll be some sickness or strange malady on board or on one of the planets, and Dr. Laika will have to cure them or research a cure. Or there'll be poor old Sproggle, who gets a rather raw deal of the whole thing, but Sproggle will somehow manage to get the map the right way up, and they'll navigate themselves out of danger.
And they also sometimes get out of things with the help of Lavender Castle itself, which is quite unusual because it apparently has this great power that can be effective anywhere. And when they call on and wish for Lavender Castle to help them, sometimes it will, and there'll be some strange thing that happens, and you see, you know, a lavender effect, so you know that it's caused by Lavender Castle.
And as we mentioned in our last episode, Brian, the this is not what we'd call hard science depiction of space, is it? It's in this particular galaxy, space operates in a very strange fashion, and so the Paradox can travel in at speeds in excess of the speed of light. And if the Paradox happens to be destroyed in a deadly explosion, well, they might encounter some sort of time device that will turn back time and allow them to rescue the ship. So, yes, there's lots of fantastical stuff going on, isn't there?
Yes, birds flying in space and spaceships with timber construction and a thatched roof and so on.
And, of course, with a crew of these weird and wonderful characters, they all get their own particular moments in episodes to shine, to fix the engine, to rescue the crew, to cure an illness, to pilot them out of danger. Perhaps poor, as we say, poor old Sproggle, that's going to be a constant theme for this episode, I think, Brian.
Yes, maybe so. Now, we should talk about the idea of the mismatched crew or the ragtag bunch of misfits on a spaceship, because it's something that we've seen quite a bit in British science fiction. We see it, of course, on Blake 7, and then later on The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, or at least that's later in terms of television shows. And then, of course, on Red Dwarf.
Yes, probably those three are the pinnacles of this trope on British TV, I would guess. I sort of, when I looked at this trope on, because there are web pages devoted to this idea and listing all the various examples, I think it sort of, it rules out the organised sort of naval ship of, say, something like Hyperdrive or Astronauts. It's more, as you say, Brian, it's this ragtag bunch of misfits who are thrown together on board a ship.
Yes, that does seem to be the idea, and that's sort of what separates it, is the not only a mismatched bunch of people, but that they're sort of thrown together by circumstance rather than by any design.
So if we were looking across the pond, American or North American television, we wouldn't be talking about classic Star Trek. We'd be talking about Joss Whedon's Firefly, wouldn't we, Brian?
Yes, but we might be talking about Star Trek Picard, because it sort of has that idea to it.
He does indeed assemble a ragtag bunch of misfits, doesn't he?
And if you look in anime, you have things like Cowboy Bebop. So it is quite widespread. And you also have things like Farscape, American-Australian co-production, that did that too.
Yes, Farscape's an interesting show. Yes, I should go back to that one of these days. Like the wonderful thing with, I think, some of Jim Henson's studio work on that, was there, Brian?
Yes, absolutely. Brian Henson, the son of Jim Henson, was a producer on it, and they did a lot of work on it. That was sort of the American half of the co-production.
Ah, okay. And of course, if we look to the big screen, recently on our screens, we've had Guardians of the Galaxy, which I think takes this the misfits on aboard a spaceship idea and runs with it as well, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, in that case, you have precedent from comic books that goes back quite a long ways.
Indeed. Now, at the end of the last episode, we did say we were going to talk a little bit about Gerry Anderson's productions and how this fits in. It's not his first foray into stop-motion animation. We did cover, of course, Dick Spanner PI on British Invaders 216 and 217, which was his first stop-motion show.
Yes, that was a wonderful series. And in fact, there is a clip from Dick Spanner that can be seen on a TV screen in a Lavender Castle episode. So they put in a little reference there, which was cute.
That's lovely that they managed to fit that in.
Yes. And the tone and the style of this series was something of a change for Gerry Anderson. It was in these very short episodes, and it had a very young style. It was geared to a very young audience, maybe a bit like what he did in terms of audience for Joe 90.
Oh, right. Yes, that's an interesting comparison. As you say, taking the age down slightly, aiming at a younger audience.
It's a very different show from Joe 90, and it does that in a very different way. But it is sort of aiming for that younger audience, which is different from his live-action productions, or certainly things like Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons.
Oh, okay.
From the 1980s and onward, Gerry Anderson looked at different ways of doing animation for his series. It was no longer the Super Marionation approach from the 60s, where marionettes were being filmed. You had different approaches coming in.
Yes, and I mean, part of this, I guess, is him moving with the technology as it allowed. But part of it does seem that, you know, he often had frustration with those marionettes and wanted to move beyond them. We know he particularly wanted to do live action film and television. But he did sometimes, I think, express a certain frustration with the technology that had made him a household name. And of course, we've looked at other types of animation that he used when we talked about Terrorhawks, where I believe it was Super Macro Nation was what he called it. And they had those rather Japanese anime-inspired character faces.
Yes, and that was like a type of hand puppets they were using rather than marionettes. It was a different mechanic to how it was done.
Yeah.
He experimented with a mixture of live actors and sort of Muppet-influenced creations with things with animatronics on them and actors involved in Space Precinct. So that was sort of a real mix of things.
Yes, and Space Precinct is still on the list, Brian.
It is indeed. He also went to full computer-generated animation with the new Captain Scarlet in 2005.
And of course, you know, that has carried on beyond him. And so now we have the CGI Thunderbirds Are Go series that's running at the moment.
Yes, that's right.
And I guess we would say that Lavender Castle is... it's the most fantasy type of his shows. It turns away from sort of what we might call a harder science fiction of technology and machinery and spaceships into something that's very sort of high fantasy, maybe reflecting, you know, the popularity in fantasy shows from the turn of the century onwards. Or maybe because Rodney Matthews just had this idea knocking around from back in the 70s when fantasy and prog rock was quite a thing at the time, Brian.
Yes, the look of it certainly does have a big fantasy type of influence. If you look at some of the characters, they are reminiscent of things we would see in high fantasy, like Laika, for instance, has a look like that. And the look of the space travel is deliberately not meant to be a realistic look of space travel. It looks like something that is a mixture of space travel and seafaring travel and travel in air, you know, aircraft and flying things and so on. So it gives you quite a unique look that we're not used to seeing from Gerry Anderson or from many other things either.
Okay, so Brian, I guess it's time we started talking about our own feelings about Lavender Castle. Would you like to kick us off with what you liked about the show?
Okay. I think the visuals, while very different, were quite neat. The stop motion, I think, looks quite good. I do like those character designs quite a bit. And the computer animation, while it is definitely limited by modern standards, it does a very good job at showing us what's happening and letting us see what's going on and the sort of design of the different types of things.
Yes, I certainly like the look of the show, and particularly, like yourself, Brian, I love the character design. I love the stop motion animation aspect of it. The creatures and characters and robots themselves just all look great, I think. I see that the producer, as I said, Chris Bowden, has got an Isambard puppet on his shelf. Jamie Anderson apparently had a Sproggle, but he sold it on eBay, he said, when he was younger and slightly less attuned to this stuff, and now wishes he kept it. For myself, I'd have taken a Sir Squeakalot, who I think looks lovely. This is a show where they didn't actually get any toys or merchandise, it seems, just the actual show itself.
Yeah, this one I didn't think had quite that level of popularity or drive behind it to get that, which in a way is too bad.
It is a shame. Like yourself, the CGI, I'm okay with the CGI. I mean, it is fairly, I suppose, early television CGI, but it's not too bad for a sort of cartoon show. There are some bits, particularly when they have to animate smoke or explosions, which I thought looked a bit crude by modern standards. But on the whole, it's not too bad. I just really love the sort of actual puppets themselves.
Yes, those are very nice. I thought the voice acting and the performances in this one were also pretty good. They are a little cartoony in the voices for some of them, but they're not too bad in that way. They have a somewhat more realistic feel to them compared to things like Thunderbirds. It has a feel to the voices that I like.
Yes, I did like all the voice performances. There's just the four of them, and they do a great job. And again, I'm going to give a plug to the Gerry Anderson podcast, which of course has Jamie Anderson on it. And I think it's episodes 96 and 97 where they have an interview with David Holt, who did, of course, Captain Thrice and Sproggle. And he talks about the fun they had in the recording booth, but also about how overawed and sort of excited they all were to actually meet Gerry Anderson them himself, the effect he had on them, because they'd grown up, of course, watching his shows.
Oh yes, how interesting. That's nice.
Yeah, it is. It's a good podcast. I recommend it. What about the writing of the show and these fairly sort of short in and out adventures in 10 minutes, Brian?
I thought it was okay. It was not great, but it sort of worked.
I think it's fine for who it's intended for, which is quite a young audience. This is sort of preschool or early school years level, I think, rather than a slightly older age for something like Thunderbirds or even Captain Scarlet. But, for 10-minute episodes, the characters all get their little moments. You get in and out, there's some peril, but it's quickly resolved, and then they're on to the next one.
Okay. Is that going to bring us to the negatives now, or there is something else you wanted to mention?
No, I think that's about it, really. I mean, it's not bad for its target audience. We do have a few things that we've had problems with this show, I think, haven't we, Ryan?
Yeah, I think the first one is probably that the 10-minute time slot holds them back, because there's so much that has to happen in 10 minutes that they're not able to do very much with it as a story. So that, to me, is the one of the big limitations here, is that it ends up being a little bit dull in the storytelling, and I think mostly that's a matter of the time slot. And as you say, it works for this very young show, but I think that was a disadvantage for them.
Yes. It does seem to happen very quickly, and that may be some of it to do with the costs of actually stop-motion animation, which, of course, is a very laborious process. They were working very fast, and by fast they meant they were producing 10 seconds a day of animation. So it is quite a time-consuming process to produce these sort of things, I guess, Brian.
Oh, yes, it certainly is.
Of course, it's a big change into fantasy world for Gerry Anderson. As we've said, this is a very weird fantasy-type space adventure, which has no real relationship to any physics at all, does it?
No, it really doesn't. And not all of the Super Mario Nation shows did either, but those had a fairly consistent world, and it was a fairly consistent science fiction type world where you had vehicles that could travel in space or go underwater and so on. And it was not usually referenced from one show to another on TV, although the comics did. It was something that had a common kind of feel to it. And this is different. This is very different.
Yes, very much so. And I did wonder, whether some of my resistance to this show was to do with my own nostalgic feeling for those Super Mario Nation shows of my childhood and the vehicles and the explosions and all the excitement that they had. And of course, as you say, Brian, it's a certain degree of a shared universe. I don't think you could squeeze Lavender Castle into that sort of shared Anderson Marionation universe, could you?
No, I don't think so. And Terrahawks was sort of trying to recreate some of that from 10 or 15 years earlier, but that was really not what they were trying to do with Lavender Castle. They were trying to recreate an earlier sense to what they had done with things. It was definitely something new, and I do applaud them for that. I think that was nice.
Yes.
In the negatives, while it certainly doesn't have the level of racism that you had in some of the earlier Gerry Anderson productions, especially Terrahawks, it does have some issues. In particular, Dr. Aegon, who is a wonderful character, is a villain with sort of a Romany or gypsy look to him. And that, I think, was unfortunate. And it also, they have their one or two female characters. It would have been nice if they could have done a little bit more with female characters as well.
Yes, yes, it would have done. And, you know, I also had a slight problem that Dr. Aegon is not quite up there with Zelda from Terrorhawks or the Hood from Thunderbirds in terms of Gerry Anderson villains, but probably appropriate for a sort of target audience of 4 or 5 year olds, I guess.
Yes, for this show, I thought he worked really well and had, you know, a wonderful imposing voice.
Yes. And you noted that that was probably, they'd use some sort of filter on the voice actor for Dr. Aegon.
I don't know exactly what they did for that voice. It sounded like they were doing something, but I'm not sure exactly what the details were for that. But they did do some nice things with the characters. For me, I think the biggest issue with Lavender Castle is that it is a little bit dull some of the time.
Yes, I guess so. And just whizzes by in a way. They can go by in a bit of a blur, can't they?
Yes, there's only so much they can do in terms of story in 10 minutes.
Yeah. And of course, another problem at the moment is it's become rather expensive. Although, as I say, do track it down secondhand. If Jamie Anderson ever did secure the rights and put out a new reissue, maybe with some more background features, making of sort of stuff that I like, then I might be interested, actually. But at the current price of over £50 new, you've definitely got to go to the secondhand markets.
Yes. So I think that brings us to our recommendations. Do you want to start this time?
Okay. Well, you know, you asked me a question off air as to whether this was going to go anywhere near my Gerry Anderson top five. And clearly it isn't. It's not really aimed at me. It's at a much younger audience. If you can pick up a copy for less than a fiver, and if you've got young children to show it to, then I would say give it a go. But for the rest of our listenership, I would actually say probably give this one a pass. Some of the designs of the characters and the stop motion puppetry is actually wonderful to look at little bits and pieces on YouTube. But for the whole series, I'd probably give this one a pass, Brian. What about yourself?
I am going to fall in line with that. I'm not going to recommend this, mainly for it being a little bit dull and these very short stories not being able to do enough with them. I would say, rather than looking at this, look at Dick Spanner PI, which was a stop-motion Gerry Anderson show that I found very entertaining indeed. So that's where I would go for that.
Okay, I would probably go away from Gerry Anderson and say Clangers.
Okay, fair enough.
But of course, if you think we've got it wrong on Lavender Castle, if you know a bit more about it or want to tell us your own experiences watching it with your family or yourself, then please get in touch on the Facebook group.
Yes, absolutely. So, in summary, Lavender Castle introduces us to Captain Thrice and his ragtag crew of this spaceship called the Paradox. That is a strange spaceship that is sort of wood construction house with a thatched roof, and they are searching for Lavender Castle, this very powerful place that is hard to find, and it sometimes helps them with its influence, and they are often pursued by the evil Dr. Aegon, who is also looking for Lavender Castle, but he wants to destroy it, and by doing that, destroy the light in the universe.
Interesting stuff and lovely puppets. Please let us know what you thought of Lavender Castle.
Absolutely.
And please come back next time. We are approaching Halloween. We always try to find something slightly sinister and spooky. And we're looking at some strange goings-on a Greek island in The Dark Side of the Sun from 1983, which already, from my starting watching it, it's got some interesting stuff for us to talk about, Brian.
Yes, it'll definitely be a nice shift and a good one for Halloween. So until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there, and I'm sure we will be talking about Gerry Anderson shows quite soon.
Indeed we will. And also track us down at the Voice of Geeks Network, vognetwork.com. You may have heard Bobby talking about the network on our recent Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game episode, so you know a little bit more about what goes on at voguenetwork.com.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.